Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan and today I am so excited to share with you an interview that I did with the one and only Riley Sager. You may know Riley Sager from his novels Final Girls, Home Before Dark, The Last Time I Lied, and Lock Every Door. He's got a new novel called Survive the Night that you've probably heard me gush about on the podcast before. Survive the Night is an awesome thriller about a girl named Charlie who's in a car with someone who may or may not be a serial killer. Her best friend has been murdered, and even though she may have seen the murderer, she can't trust what she saw that night. What follows is a tense game of cat and mouse played out on night-shrouded roads and in neon parking lots during an age when the only call for help can be made on a payphone and in a place where there's nowhere to run. Survive the Night is incredible. It's a love letter to movies, and it might be my favorite of Riley Sager's books so far. I had such a blast talking with Riley, and I hope you'll have a blast listening to us. So without further ado, please enjoy my interview with Riley Sager. Hi, Riley Sager. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing so well. I have to tell you this funny story. So I finished Survive the Night last night, and I loved it, but I have to tell you this story because I was reading it. And at one point your characters describe this resort in the Poconos, which I have stayed at.
But I made it up.
Yes, but there is one. I was absolutely howling. So for my listeners who haven't read it yet, at one point there is described this resort that is bananas, and it is like log cabins on the outside and weird on the inside, like heart-shaped pools and round beds and mirrored ceilings. And there's this huge like lobby building. There's like a mini golf course in one wing. Yeah, I've stayed there. I was losing it. I was dying laughing. The Poconos is the most ridiculous, amazing place I've ever been.
The Poconos is fascinating because it really was like in like the 30s and 40s, it was where famous people in New York went to vacation. And so there were like Bing Crosby just hanging out at like this hotel in the Poconos. And then it just all turned to crap so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just, and now it's like reinvented itself as like this weird family fun, you know, Great Wolf Lodge, Kalahari resort destination. And it's endlessly reinventing itself. And it's so fascinating to me.
It is the weirdest fever dream of a place. I loved it so much. I was absolutely dying reading that book and just being able to picture exactly every single detail. I was like, but yes, Survive the Night. Ah, it's so good.
Thank you.
I have loved all of your books. But this is, I think this might be my favorite so far. It's really fun. I often describe your books as like reading a movie. They're very cinematic. They're very like, once the action starts, it doesn't stop. I often read them in one sitting because I can't put them down. This one is a total love letter to film, which is so cool.
It really is. Like this is the book. Like my books are pretty mainstream. Like lots of people, they're accessible. Lots of people like them. This one, not quite so much. And so, I mean, I think everyone can enjoy it, but there's like one particular brand of person who like, they're like, yes, this is my jam right here.
100%. Yeah, I want to go back and make a list of all of the films that are referenced so that I can go have like a movie marathon, and, like go watch.
I already did that for you.
Yes.
It's on my website. If you click on because I have like the little book covers there. If you click on the one for Survive the Night, there's like a little tab that will take you to a guide of all of the movies that have been referenced in the book.
That's amazing. I was reading it, I was like, I want to watch that. Ooh, I want to rewatch that. Ooh, I want to watch that. that is awesome. Do you have a favorite film genre?
No, people are surprised because they expect me to say like horror or thrillers. And I am a huge Disney nerd.
Me too.
So put me down in front of a Disney movie and I am just like a kid again. And so if people ask, like, what's your favorite movie? It's probably Mary Poppins.
Oh, that's such a good one. That's a great answer. I love Mary Poppins.
It's so, so good.
Oh, yeah. I am also a huge Disney nerd, so I appreciate that answer.
Like, the listeners won't be able to see this, but if I duck out of the way, you can see like a collection of some of my Disney figurines behind me. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
and in fact, like, this is, you cannot see it, but just like beyond these bookshelves here, framed, hanging on the wall, is my autograph of Walt Disney that I bought as a present to myself when Final Girls made the bestseller list. That was my, it was like always a dream to have it. Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, Final Girls is a bestseller.
Oh,
I'm going to treat myself. Yes. And yeah, so I...
Oh my gosh, that's an awesome gift to yourself. That's amazing. Oh, I'm so jealous.
It's a place of pride. Like every time I walk into my office, like the first thing I see is Walt Disney's autograph, like hanging on the wall.
Oh, that's so cool. That is so cool. Speaking of Final Girls, so, oh gosh, I love the Final Girls trope just in general, in movies, in literature. And of course, Final Girls is a total like love letter to Final Girls. And this Survive the Night is also like, has that awesome Final Girls trope in it. What do you love about the Final Girls trope?
I love that they always start off as these usually meek, quiet, uncertain, fragile things who are just pushed to extremes that you cannot even imagine. And I think it's something that we all can relate to, like regardless of gender, like we all feel like helpless in certain situations.
Yeah.
And what are we going to do here? And how are we going to get out of this? And you find like these deep reserves of strength that you did not know existed within yourself. And you come out of it a little bit changed.
Yeah.
Where you realize like I'm capable of a lot more than I thought I was.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I love that. I love that they start saying like, you're like, oh, are they just going to be a victim? Are they just like a totally average person? And then they just, oh, they just come into their own and totally take over. And it's amazing. And it's so cathartic to read. I love it. I love to imagine that I would be a final girl if thrown into that situation. I don't know that I would be, but I like to hope.
I know. I do that too, where they're like, well, would you be the final girl? I'm like, I'd probably be like the second one killed. Like,
yeah.
What am I being honest? Like, I think I would have enough sense to maybe like, you know, stay out of the hot tub when the killer is on the loose, but they'd find my hiding place like immediately. Right. And yeah, there I'd go.
I'd be like killed off screen. I like, would- I wouldn't even be like a cool kill. I'd be like, you know,
you'd be the one that they just like cut away and it's inferred. Yes. That like,
yeah. Yeah. Do you have a favorite final girl?
Oh, that would be Sydney from Scream.
That's a good one.
No disrespect to Laurie Strode. She is the queen, but Scream was the movie that because I never really paid attention to horror movies.
Yeah.
By then, because when I was growing up, they had such an awful reputation because most of them were awful. And It was really like Halloween 6 or something was playing in the theater. And then Scream came out and it was just unlocked something in my brain because it was funny, so funny, so self-referential and scary, so very scary. And I'd never encountered a character like Sidney Prescott before, who was what we were talking about, just so wounded and meek. And by the end of the movie, you know, she's wielding the gun and just not in my movie. And it's just, you just would like want to stand up and cheer.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I love her. I love Scream. That's so good. Okay. I have to tell you, we won't give anything away, but there are so many twists and turns in Survive the Night. And I didn't see any of them coming. I was, one of my coworkers can attest because I was reading it at one point in the back room and I just kept going, oh, what? So I have to know, did you have all of them planned out? Did you know like the final one and then the others crept up? Did they all surprise you while writing it? Like, how did that work for you?
Well, I'm not even sure I could answer this without like.
Yeah, we won't. Any, we want no spoilers. We'll be vague.
Because there are many. Like, it's yes. It's weird. Like, because it starts out like, yeah, it's just two people in a car.
Yeah.
And we're in that car for a very long time with them.
Yes.
And I wanted the reader to be thinking, like, I wanted them to be in suspense, be like, oh my gosh.
Yes.
But I also knew, like, when are we going to get out of the car? Because you know they're going to get out of the car at some point.
Yes.
And then once they do, it's just
boom, insanity. Boom, boom.
Yeah. And so, like, I had all of them in mind.
Okay.
Before I started. Like, normally I outline to a weird degree. And I decided in this one, like, I'm going to enjoy the ride, like pun intended. Like yes. I knew where we were going to end up. Like I knew the ending.
Okay.
And I knew sort of the steps along the way to get us there. And then the rest was just spontaneous and be like, okay, I'm literally getting in this car and we're going to see where we go.
Oh, so. I love that. I love that. So for so much of the book it is just our two characters. It is Charlie and Josh. And even with that, like, Charlie is somewhat of an unreliable narrator because she has these, she calls them movies in her mind, these sort of like hallucinations. Where did that come from? Like, what sparked that for you?
Well, when I knew that I was going to do this, because I wasn't sure at first when I got the idea, I'm like, wow, it's mostly two people in a car. Is there an entire book there? Mm-hmm. How am I going to keep her in this car? And so number one was set it in 1991.
Yes.
Because there are no cell phones. There's no GPS. You can't hail an Uber. There's none of that. You are at the mercy of a payphone and the kindness of strangers. Mm-hmm. And so that was like right there. I'm like, okay, that's good. That's good. I still need to find more ways to keep her in this car. And that's when I latched onto the idea of maybe she has a really deep-seated psychological issue here that has gone unaddressed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a psychiatrist would be like, girl, you are having serious hallucinations. You need medication right now. But to her, they are movies in her mind.
Yeah.
And it's her way of dealing with stress is her switch flicks on in her head. And it's like she's experiencing these things as a movie and it's a safe reserve and it's at a distance. And so it's like not happening to her. It's happening to someone else and she's just observing. And when you're in a situation that potentially life or death, to not be able to trust, like, am I really experiencing this? Is this just a movie in my mind? And then to have someone right alongside of you who might use that to exploit you. So it's a whole big mind game.
Yeah.
That these two characters are playing with each other. And that I'm also at the same time playing with the reader.
100%. Yeah. As soon as I realized, like, oh, I also can't trust what's happening, it just amps up the intensity. And I love Charlie, the last time she saw her best friend, her roommate, before this girl was murdered, she was with someone and Charlie had this quote unquote movie in her mind. And so even though she saw the last, probably the killer, right? And she saw her best friend alive for the last time. She has no idea who it is because of this movie in her mind. And I just love that it's like she's grappling with, like, I feel like for her, they've always been sort of comforting in a way. They sprung up out of grief from her parents' death. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, if I hadn't had these, my best friend might be alive, or I would at least be able to tell the police or someone who did it. Oh, I just love that it like flip-flopped from this like almost comfort to just a catalyst for crazy.
All types of things. Yeah. And it's how much is that going to mess someone up to know that they could have saved their best friend?
Yeah.
But their brain was playing tricks on them at the moment someone else needed them the most, and you failed them.
Yeah.
But you didn't, like, your brain. It was really fascinating to really delve into that, and the guilt that she's feeling and the grief that she's feeling and how they're so intertwined, and how it just messes her up so much where she just needs to get away. And that was another thing. Like, why is she leaving at this point in time, knowing that there's a killer out there?
Right.
And it's because she has to. Like, you can only live so long with that kind of mental burden before you need to escape. And she had reached a breaking point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this book is so much like not just the thriller, the psychological thriller, but it really is a book about grief and loss and guilt. And I found that really fascinating, the way different characters have dealt with the grief. You know, you have your main character, Charlie, who lost her parents at a young age and in a car accident, and so can't drive now, just like refuses to drive. Hence, you know, taking this ride with this virtual stranger. And then you also have like Maddie, who was murdered, like her mother, like Charlie describes a phone call that she had with Maddie's mother and how furious she was on the phone, and Charlie was like, yeah, no, I get it, like, I'm mad at me too. Like,
yeah, and she felt like she couldn't even go to Maddie's funeral because she just was so, and it's so sad. Like, it's not a sad book, but
but
she's going through so much, and she has to survive the night, literally. And I think at some moment she just kind of wonders, like, is it even worth it?
Yeah. Do I even deserve
And that's a great place for a character to be in, because you get to use all these different emotions that are conflicting and sometimes might not even make sense to the character. Because, you know, sometimes keeping Charlie in the car is because of the movies in her mind. And sometimes it's because she feels like she deserves to be in that car. Mm-hmm. And that was when I realized that about her character. It's like, oh, wow, this is deeper than I actually intended it to be. But here we are.
Yeah, no, she's amazing. And there are even times when she possibly could have the opportunity to reach out for help for someone and chooses not to, because she's like, well, I don't want anyone else to get hurt. I've caused too much pain already. I'll take this burden. It's just like, Charlie.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, I don't think I've written a lot of great characters that I love, but she's so strong and brave and frustrating in equal measure, where you're like, don't get back in. Okay, you're back in the car. Oh, now you're going to do this. Okay, now. So it's all like this big ball of contradictions that she is.
I love Charlie. I was going to say I love all the characters. I don't love all the characters, but they are fantastic characters. Very well-rounded. There's a quote in the book where you say, like, ordinary people are capable of violent, vicious deeds. And I love that, because it is like, in just thinking about life, you know, it's true in the book and it's true in real life, that sometimes the people who do the most horrific things are just ordinary people. They're not, you know, evil incarnate, right? But they have their reasons for just being horrific humans. And that comes up a bit in the book.
It really does. Yeah. And it was at a time when, you know, Silence of the Lambs was huge in 1991. Yes. And everyone was fascinated with serial killers, mm-hmm. because of that movie. And why they were acting the way they did. And sometimes there is no why. Sometimes it's just because.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so terrifying.
Yes.
we want to explain everything away. Like, oh, he did this because his mother was this and his father abused him this way. And sometimes it's no. Sometimes they just snap.
Yep. Sometimes it's just opportunistic, or I didn't like the way that person looked at me, or, you know, they were too loud, or what is just like, that's so scary. Oh, man. Well, Riley, I think those are the majority of my questions. I could just gush at you for hours over how much I love your books.
I'm listening. I've
I could just keep going. going, but I know that you have other interviews to do. So I will wrap up and I will just say that I absolutely adored this book. I've loved all of your books, but Survive the Night is, I think, my favorite so far. And I am just so excited to just hand sell it to everyone who walks in the store.
Thank you. I love that you are one of the people who does get it.
Totally. 100%. I was like, oh, this is a film love. Oh, okay. Yes, I'm in.
Yeah. This book is for you and mm-hmm. others like you, and everyone can enjoy it. Like I said, but like, yeah, there are people, and you know, like, you know, when you meet them, you're like, yes. Yeah, you're one of us. Yeah.
It's like, I have a book for you.
and this is for those people. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Ah. I am so excited. Well, congratulations. It is phenomenal. And I wish you the best of luck in your virtual book tours and all of that.
Oh, thank you very, very much. This is so great.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye. Huge thanks again to the incredible Riley Sager. Survive the Night is available now. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!